It's time now for Ask an Astronomer with Dr. Tim O'Brien. Thanks for coming along and answering more questions.
That's fine.
All right, first question is, why is Mars red?
Okay, good question. I don't know whether anybody's noticed whether Mars is red or not, but if you've ever seen Mars in the sky, bright planet, so an obvious thing in the sky, it does appear red. Remember that it's not Mars itself that's shining, it's the sun that shines on Mars and we see light reflected from it. But yeah, it definitely appears red, an orangey colour.
And it's quite a common observation that people make in the night sky, if they're not familiar, is what's that great big red thing?
Yep.
What's that red object?
Yep, that's right. It's easy to point out Mars to somebody. You just say, see that bright star looking thing over there? See the one that looks red? And they go, oh yeah, and you say, that's Mars. And they're quite happy it's the red planet. That's what they've heard before. So actually, the answer as to why it appears red is pretty simple. But perhaps somewhat surprising, it's because it's rusty.
It's rusty?
Yep. So commoner garden rust, the sort of stuff I used to get on my old car, is what causes Mars to appear red. So rust looks red. If you've seen it on your car, you'll notice that you know rust is basically, it's an oxide of iron. It's iron that's been combined with oxygen in the atmosphere to make iron oxide. And iron oxide itself looks rusty. So.
Okay, well, that's pretty simple. But the interesting question which leads on from this is, perhaps, well, we know that iron rusts much more quickly in damp environments near water. So does that mean that this is evidence for Mars at some stage being covered in water, or at least having some more water in its atmosphere, a damp environment?
Yeah, certainly that has been suggested. I mean, now Mars is a very dry, inhospitable place, and there's certainly no evidence for liquid water on the surface of the Mars now, but there is evidence that there was liquid water on the surface of Mars in the past. So there's things like these dry river channels that look like sort of river deltas and so on, that we've seen in these pictures of Mars from the Mars landers even relatively recently. So yeah, that has been used as a suggestion that basically the iron oxide that's on the surface of Mars now, it's basically in the soil, in the sort of desert sands that cover Mars. That stems from iron in the rocks, that the surface of Mars was wet, that rusted, and then sort of erosion, sort of winds spread that around over the surface of Mars. It's not the only explanation, though. There have been other suggestions that iron was that iron oxide and iron was brought via meteorites, sort of crashing onto the surface of Mars, because there was some indication that there was more iron oxide in the soil than there was in the rocks, and so it wasn't clear that it had come from the rocks into the soil. Maybe it was added to the soil by these meteorites. But anyway, I think yeah, it's certainly used as a good piece of evidence, a good additional piece of evidence that Mars was wet in the past.
Right. All right, our next question is, what are sunspots?
Now, I don't know whether anybody's seen pictures of sunspots, but if you look at a photograph of the sun taken in white light, what you see is a bright disk, and quite often, sort of scattered across it, dotted around on its surface, are these dark spots known as sunspots. You can actually see them yourselves. You've got to be very, very careful, of course, when you look at the sun, because if you look at the sun in any way, either just using your eyes or certainly using a telescope or binoculars, any sort of optical instrument, if you look directly at the sun, you will blind yourself. So, of course, you should never do that. But it's possible, for example, to use something like, say, a cheap pair of binoculars and project the image of the sun onto, a piece of white card. So you hold the binoculars, taking care not to look through them, of course, at the sun, and taking care not to allow anybody else to look through them, of course. So you hold those and sort of, you know, direct them towards the sun, and then you put a piece of card behind them, and you can project an image onto the card. On that image, you can occasionally see these sunspots, these dark spots.
So what do these spots look like? Are they circular, or are they elliptical? What kind of shape are they?
They're not circular. But they're sort of, there's usually rough edged, they're sort of irregular blobs, if you like. If you look at them very close up, they are quite small generally, so they're not they don't sort of cover a quarter of the sun's surface or anything like that.
Right.
But they do vary in size. You can occasionally get quite large sunspot groups, and in fact, there's an interesting story associated with radio astronomy about a large sunspot group which dates back to the 1940s, to the early 1940s, during the Second World War. Radio astronomy itself had only been around for almost 10 years by that time, since the first time anybody had discovered radio waves coming from space. So it was a totally new science. And during the war, there was obviously there was a story about with these German battleships that were basically holed up in a harbour in France and wanted to get back to a safe port in Germany. And to do that, they had to go down the English Channel. So what the Germans did was to jam the British radar stations on the south coast from across the Channel to enable these battleships to escape. Mm. And so the Brits were sort of very conscious, very sensitive to the idea of their radar being jammed. And a few weeks later, all the radar stations experienced some severe interference, which they at first interpreted as being some new method of jamming that the Germans had developed, so they were in a bit of a panic about it. And it was actually a guy called J.S. Hay who realized that the interference that they were experiencing wasn't, you know, being generated by the Germans, but in fact was coming from the sun.
Right.
And he looked at a picture of the sun that had been taken at one of the observatories, and there was a huge sunspot group on the surface of the sun, and it was that was generating the sort of static that was interfering with their signals.
So that's interesting. So there's some connection between sunspots and a radio emission coming from the sun. Why?
So you know the Earth has a magnetic field, a north and a south magnetic pole, not quite in the same place as the north and south geographic poles. And the sun also has a magnetic north and south pole, and a magnetic field that's sort of wound up inside it. And as the sun rotates, that magnetic field sort of gradually gets more and more wound up. Hmm. And it turns out in a way that's still not that well understood, actually, this leads to something called the solar cycle, which is basically something that was discovered in historical times, which is that if you just took the trouble to look at a projected image of the sun every time it was clear and counted the number of sunspots and then plotted them on a graph where you plot the number of sunspots against time, what you'd see is that it rises and falls with a period of about 11 years. So every 11 years, there's a large number of sunspots, and in between you get a much reduced number of sunspots. So we've just gone through the solar minimum, where there's not very many sunspots, and in another 5.5 years' time or so, there'll be a sunspot maximum. And the sun's very active at that time, and you know these sorts of events like these radiostatic, for example, would increase. Also, phenomena like the aurora borealis and aurora australis, northern and southern lights, you'd be much more likely to see those because they're generated by particles from the sun sort of crashing into the Earth's magnetic field and heading down to its north and south poles. So the magnetic field is the sort of crucial element that gives rise to sunspots.
So what's the connection between the magnetic field and the sunspots themselves?
Yeah, it's actually that what happens is it's a bit like if you took, say, a rubber band or something and you twisted up a rubber band in your fingers, you can imagine it sort of pings out a loop occasionally of elastic. And that's a very similar phenomenon to what we think happens with the sun as the magnetic field lines sort of poke through the solar surface, and you get a sort of loop of magnetic field that pops through. And where that magnetic field sort of passes out of the solar surface and back into the solar surface, those regions are actually slightly cooler than the surrounding regions. Now, it turns out that the brightness of the solar surface is very strongly dependent on its temperature. The hotter the solar surface, the brighter it appears. So where these slightly cooler regions are, the sunspot regions, they actually appear much darker than their surroundings.
Right.
And so when we look at the sun, we see this very bright surface with these dark regions embedded in it, and they look very dark in comparison.
Right.
It turns out that actually they're not that dark intrinsically. If you could take hold of a sunspot and sort of drag it out of the sun and dump it in the middle of space somewhere all on its own, it would actually glow very brightly.
Right.
It would appear as a bright object. It's only because it's sitting inside this even brighter object that makes it look dark.
So what's roughly the difference in temperatures between a sunspot and the rest of the sun?
Yeah, 1,000 degrees or so, maybe a couple of 1,000 degrees, something like that. Right. So it's not a huge difference. The surface of the sun is at a temperature of about 6,000 degrees.
Hmm.
So it's still a very, very hot object. The sunspot itself is still very hot. It's just the fact that it's a bit cooler than the surroundings means that it appears much darker.
Right. So it's a relative thing. It just appears to be dark because it's relatively cooler than the rest of the sun.
That's right.
What happens, you know, if you make these observations of sunspots over a period of, well, I don't know, days or something like that? Presumably, they should move. I mean, the sun is a rotating ball of gas.
Mm.
Sunspots are a part of the solar surface, so...
Mm. Yeah, no, they do move. If you were able to look at sunspots sort of on consecutive days, if you had nice clear weather and you could You could map out their positions and you would see the same sunspots again and again, day after day. But what would happen is they would gradually move across the face of the sun because the sun itself is spinning.
Right.
So just like the Earth rotates, the sun rotates in about a month. It takes about a month for the sun to rotate around once. So you'll see the sunspots appear on the one side of the sun, move across, and then disappear around the back side of the sun on the opposite side. The other thing about movement of sunspots is associated with this solar cycle and sort of goes into trying to understand the origin of it, is that sunspots at the beginning of the solar cycle sort of appear near higher latitudes, so farther, closer to the poles of the sun, sort of north and south poles.
Right.
And then as the time progresses through the cycle, they appear at lower and lower latitudes, down nearer and nearer to the equator of the sun.
Oh, right. So that, I suppose the people who study the sun can use sunspots to learn a lot about how the sun works.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's one of the main bits of evidence that has been used in the past to sort of try and understand the structure of the sun. Yeah.
Great stuff. Thanks very much.
Okay.